And good evening, and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have debut author Amanda Hager, and she is coming to us from the central United States. She's a writer, attorney, and a bookworm. She lives in the Midwest with two unruly rescue dogs and a husband who encourages her delusions of grandeur. Oh, that's the best kind of husband to have. She also has a massive girl crush on Amy Poehler, and one of her life's goals is to adopt a pig named Ron Swainson. Okay, we're going to have to talk about that one. Amanda's debut romance, Without Borders, just released from Divergent Books. The story was inspired by the summer Amanda spent in rural Nicaragua eating gallo pinto, speaking mangled Spanish, like I just did, and showing high school students how to slide condoms onto oversized plantains. The second book in the Wander Love series, semi-scripted, is thinly veiled love letter to Craig Ferguson and improvisational comedy. That's the word I cannot say fast. It will be available in November of 2016, and you may connect with her on Facebook at Amanda Hager Author. She's on Twitter as I believe it's Amanda_Hager, and she has an Amazon author page. Please welcome her to the show. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So glad we could get you on. I am eager to talk about several things from your bio. First of all, yay that you have a husband that supports your delusions of grandeur, because I don't, a lot of husbands don't really understand, husbands of writers at first, how we really are kind of delusional and have to get the writing time to get the crazy out of your head.
So true. Also, my husband, he's sort of a writer himself, so I think he gets it a little more than some, maybe.
Yeah.
And is really... I think he thinks I'm a much bigger deal than I am, and I try not to tell him. I try not to let on that he's wrong, so you know, he'll keep doing the dishes so I can have the writing time.
Well, you're a big deal to him, so it doesn't matter. And what is this about Ron Swainson?
Well, I am a like super mega Parks and Recreation fan. I don't know if you've watched the show. But there's the best character of all time is Ron Swanson, the sort of curmudgeon-y, you know, Parks and Recreation director. And another thing I've always wanted to do is adopt a pig. They're like so smart and just fun, amazing creatures. And I thought, you know, if I ever do adopt a pig, I'm going to name it after, you know, one of my all-time favorite characters. And it just happened that, you know, Ron Swanson fits really well. So
it really does. That's awesome. It's funny because you say that. One day I was driving down our street in our neighborhood, and I guess these people down the street had a potbelly pig, but it was running from them. And you know, you're just driving down this nice suburban neighborhood, and you look over, and this people are chasing this big little pig. It was the most bizarre thing. I was like, I had to double check, and I'm like, what? Okay. They are cute.
They are.
Okay, and so. So let's go into we'll get to talking about Without Borders in a minute. So how do you go from you're an attorney an attorney?
Oh, I am. I will be an attorney until my student loans are paid off, which will be a while from now.
And so what got the writing bug going with you?
You know, I've always been a major bookworm. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with the Babysitter's Club, as any good child of the 80s was. Mm-hmm. And my parents signed me up for this, like, Scholastic Book Club thing where I got 3 Babysitter's Club books in the mail every month, plus all these trinkets and stuff. And it was amazing. And then I would get in trouble because they would come and I would read them all like over the course of one weekend. And then I would be like, Mom, I need more books. And I just bought you more books. But anyway, so just being sort of obsessed with that, I thought I was going to be either I was going to start my own Babysitter's Club and become a millionaire that way, or I was going to become Anna Martin and actually write books.
There you go.
Yeah, so I always was sort of a major bookworm, but I never actually tried it. Like, I would try when I was a kid to write a couple, like, I was like, I'm going to write a novel, and then I would write something that was basically just a knockoff of, like, Sweet Valley High and maybe
yeah.
two pages, and, like, so it wasn't really until, like, maybe 3 or 4 years ago that I really decided, hey, I'm gonna actually try this now for real, like an adult, and, you know, sit down and try it and just see if I can write an entire book. And it turns out I could, after much blood and tears and, you know, gnashing of teeth, I made it. But yeah.
So how was that? I mean, was that like one of the things you checked off your list of, I knew I could do this and, you know, I got this done in my life?
Kind of, in a way. I mean, and then it sort of hooked me too. Like, I really went at it with, I just wonder if I can actually write an entire book. And it took me forever to do it, you know, get that first draft out, because I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't have the discipline, and it was it was a mess. But then once I did it, I was like, oh, maybe now I have a whole book. Maybe I can revise it. And then once I revised it, it was like, wow, I did that too. Maybe I can find an agent. And, you know, we just went from there. So
awesome. Well, awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's like a inspirational to anybody that, you know, sits there and thinks, do they have a book in them and do they have it, what it takes? So that's really good. But
yeah,
you went through law school, so
you
have what it
takes. Fear, you can do it.
Yeah.
Law school
so
is like a whole
me.
Other animal. Writing a book is a lot harder than going to law school, honestly.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll take your word for it, because I'm not going to do the law school, but I have my own student loans still to pay. So when you got your book ready and you went to seek an agent, what was that process like for you? Was it like pulling your fingernails out, or were you one of the people that got lucky and had a pretty smooth process?
It's kind of, I don't know. It's never a smooth process for anybody, I don't think. I will say it was hard for me because I am such a perfectionist, just sort of by my very nature, but you can't make a book perfect. Like, it's just not possible. So I spent over a year writing and revising and trying to, you know, get everything ready and then still revising some more. And in the end, I didn't have to send out that many query letters. I think I sent out like 15 or something. So that sort of path was smoother, but the getting there for the year before was like just full of potholes and booby traps and everything you can imagine. So
yeah. Yeah, booby traps probably explains it better than just about anything.
Yeah.
It's like it almost sets you up for the to get your foot stuck in a net or something. But hey, you know, that's why it's worth it. So good on that. So when you got the agent, you've apparently sold the book, which was great. And when you got
yes.
that final copy in your hand, what was it like? Was it like the best thing ever?
It was pretty cool. Like, I didn't know it was coming. Nobody told me, hey, we put your book in the mail. And so I just got this package, you know, from my publisher, and I was like, oh my God, it's my book. And my brain just sort of actually shut down. Like, I couldn't comprehend that it was my book. It took me a little while. I think the best part was, I'm pretty sure it's my editor wrote this really nice note and stuck it in there, but the handwriting, he's probably listening, sorry, Randall, was so awful I couldn't really tell who it was from. I think this was from him. No, but it was a really cool experience, and I still I have a couple copies on my bookshelf, and sometimes I just pick them up, and I'm like, wow, I wrote this. That's really cool. I still can't quite wrap my brain around it.
Oh, that is pretty cool. Yeah, that's got to be such a cool feeling. So, what is obviously your story is it was inspired by, you know, something that comes from your actual life. So that kind of stumps my whole. I usually ask people, do you draw from your life experiences? So tell us about your trip. Tell us about your trip first. That was the big inspiration for this, and then we'll talk about how it went translated over to the story.
Sure. So I was 21. And I signed up for this program. It's called Global Justice Volunteers. Well, I applied for it and they selected me. And basically the application process is you write some essays about why you want to go, and then they just send you somewhere. You don't really get to pick where you go, and you commit to a summer of just sort of volunteering, but the volunteering is more about like learning than actually doing something. So you're learning about communities and you're learning from people who are working on social justice issues and stuff like that. So I applied for that and I was selected, and they sent me to a small town in Nicaragua in the that's called the regional, well, I'm going to bungle it, but it's the North Atlantic basic region. And they sent me to a small town there called Sasa. And I lived there with a public, and I worked with a public health organization. Me and two other ladies my age, and we lived with a man. His job was to sort of to run the organization and to be in charge of, there was a nurse, and they ran some health clinics, and they had different community education programs. So people would come from, you know, they would walk for days to get to the house where we were living so they could attend these, you know, public health informational sessions. And then they would take what they learned at the informational sessions and go back to their communities. And they were sort of the health leaders of their communities, and they would teach people what they have. And then one of the things I got to do while I was there was I spent a couple weeks traveling with a doctor who was actually sponsored by the Nicaraguan government, their Ministry of Health. He traveled on a boat with, you know, a brigade and visited several communities along the way that were only accessible by boat. So whereas I was in a rural area living where I had, you know, at least I had a toilet that flushed and I had electric 4 hours a day, these communities didn't have any sort of electric or, you know, plumbing or running water. So I spent a couple weeks doing that, and we would just, you know, get in and out of the boat, and, you know, I got to help with different things, vaccinating babies and weighing babies, and, you know, mostly I was just there to entertain the kids and keep them out of his hair, I think, but.
Right.
Yeah.
So you did teach, but you did teach them to the people.
About. I did. One of the things that we, the two other girls that I was with, and I noticed is there was an issue in some of the communities we were with domestic violence, just like there's issues with domestic violence here in the U.S. But there wasn't any sort of system in place to talk about them. And I was a psychology major at the time. And I remember a nurse coming up to me and said, there's a woman here in this community whose husband beats her very badly. And I told her that there's a psychologist coming and that she could come and talk to you.
Oh my gosh.
And I was 21 and did not have a psychology degree and had no experience working with victims of domestic violence at that time. And I was the best thing they had. And that was like a real eye-opening moment. And so luckily one of the other girls I was with had a lot of experience volunteering at like a domestic violence shelter. And so the three of us got together and we put some, you know, just very basic information together about like the cycle of violence and how that affects people and resources where you can go if you're a victim, and just very basic information that was not being disseminated there for whatever reason. So that was part of my like sort of big crowning project while I was there, which was really cool and really
eye-opening.
And
It's amazing the things that the things that we take for granted here on a daily basis, that, you know, you step outside the country and go somewhere like that and just you have no idea.
It was good, and it taught me a lot about things I need in my life and things I don't really actually need, I just think I need, you know. And it was a really good like life shaping summer for me. So glad I did it, even though it was very hard sometimes.
So tell me, how did this translate into your book Without Borders? I know that the story kind of runs along the same type of theme there, but what part inspired you the most to put into your story, to write the story? I mean, that's a huge experience. I know that would inspire just about anybody, I think, to at least speak about it to other people. But
yeah, so in the story, the actual basis of the story is an American girl travels to Nicaragua. She's trying to get a letter of recommendation for medical school. And so she volunteers with this month-long medical brigade. And then, so she expects to be doing sort of these medical things, and she doesn't expect that she's going to start to develop feelings for the doctor in charge.
Okay.
The doctor in charge isn't super a fan of American volunteers who come in and try to tell him what to do, but yet he finds himself falling for her. So none of that actually happened to me. I feel like I have to get that out because that's like, you know, I get a lot of that. But I did take a lot of inspiration from the things that – I'm laughing here because one of my friends is listening and she's sending me like funny texts about the things I'm saying at the same time. Anyway, but I did take a lot of sort of like the day-to-day things I did on the brigade. You know, just getting in and out of the boat and the raining. And I don't want to give too many spoilers, but there's some things that happen to Annie that she has to deal with involving pigs, involving someone tries to sell her a toucan out of a backpack. That happened to me. You know, just little everyday things, like not the major storyline. None of that happened to me, but
right.
The little everyday things that you just sort of draw from and you're like, oh, I remember when that happened. They'll stick that in there. So,
yeah. Well, those things, you know, give it its authenticity. I can't speak tonight. Something about Thursdays. Every Thursday I get tongue tied. Make it more authentic here. Let me say it a different way. Because those are things that obviously you've been put in that situation for the whole month. So, you know, they kind of help out. And anybody else that's ever been to a in a place like that can probably identify with those things. But that's pretty cool. That's a good story. So I'm guessing because it's romance, it has a happily ever after.
It does. Well, I mean, it's sort of new adult age. She's 21, so it's more of a happily for now.
Happily for now,
because,
okay.
You know, she's young, but it ends on a happy note.
Okay, good. Okay. And so you've decided you're going to write more then, apparently. You're working on a second book. You've got a second book all lined up.
Yeah, so it's we sold it as a 3-book series.
Okay.
The second book is out in November, and it is actually, it's not a continuation of Annie and Felipe's story. It's a secondary character from Without Borders, Marisol, who is Felipe's sister.
Okay.
And she travels to L.A. She's a nurse, and she's in L.A. for a public health conference. And while she's there, she sort of gets scammed into appearing on a late-night talk show. And then her appearance on the show goes viral, sort of like Alex from Target. And then she's sort of like torn between this thing of she's semi-famous and people want to be around her. But at the other time, she has all these work obligations that she's trying to balance with. And then she's also developing a romance with one of the show's writers.
Oh, okay. Ooh, that sounds cute.
It's really fun. I think of Without Borders as being sort of a more serious book that has moments, whereas Semi-Scripted is just an exercise in absurdity. Like, it's really funny and fun, and I really had a good time writing it. So,
so there will be a third as well.
There will be a third, which I am writing right now. I've already asked for 2 extensions on it, so I have to get it done soon. But it takes place in a summer camp in West Virginia. Oh. And it's about sort of the camp director, and the camp is struggling, and he really wants to keep it alive. But his boss has sent a business consultant basically to shut it down, and it's a romance about the two of them.
Oh, okay. Awesome. That's cute.
Yeah. Hopefully it will get done in time.
Well, good luck. I know if you know, you have a career too, so that's got to be really hard.
It can be tough sometimes. You know, I got up at 5 o'clock this morning and I was writing before I went to work, and then I worked until 6 o'clock tonight. But luckily, I'll say my publisher has been exceedingly flexible with me and my deadlines, and So I couldn't ask for more from them on that. So I'm lucky that way.
So you get up early. Do you make that your writing routine? Is it you write before work, or how do you structure your?
Yeah, I do my best, I think, writing before work, because by the time I get off work, I do my day job is writing. Like, I spend, 90% mm-hmm. of my day writing legal stuff.
Right.
So by the time I get home, sometimes I'm just too drained. So I do mm-hmm. a lot in the morning. Even if it's just half an hour or something, I can crank out 500 words. And then a lot on the weekends, too.
Oh. Wow. You're a busy, busy lady.
I am. But it's working out. And I'm lucky to be in this position, so I try not to complain about it too much.
Yeah. No, that's. I think it's wonderful. If you can get if you could get 2 books a year out, that's, I mean, some full-time writers only get 2 books a year out, so that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's been good. I couldn't
go
do
ahead.
More than that, I don't think. But.
Yeah, no, I don't. I think you're amazing, because I work from home and have a really busy 4-year-old, but I don't know. I don't know how people do it. It's crazy. We're almost halfway. I'm going to put the phone number out just in case anybody wants to call in to speak with you. It is 347-633-9609. If anybody wants to call in to talk to Amanda Hager, come on, call on in. Also, I want to mention, since we're just about halfway, that your publisher has put up a Rafflecopter giveaway on this event page on Facebook, to give away 5 copies of your book. So honestly, I need to go find out. I need to look and see when that closes so we can tell people. But anyway, if you're listening and you haven't read the book, you need to go over and enter. And that way you too, let's see, I think there's 6 days. So you have 6 days to enter. So maybe you could win a copy of this book. And, get on the grand floor of the 3-book series, because, you got to mm-hmm. read them all.
Yeah, please.
Definitely. So tell me about how weirded out were you about selling a book and signing contracts, being an attorney? I always wonder this, because I've met several authors that are also attorneys. I said, it's got to be mm-hmm. totally different for you to get all those contracts when you sell a book, then for me going, I need to find an attorney.
Well, I know enough to know I don't know much about sort of publishing contracts.
Uh-huh.
The area of alignment is very different. So I had a friend who does some, well, a friend's wife who does some stuff in this area. And so she looked at it for me, made some suggestions. So I think I just got lucky in that maybe I had a friend. But
that's good.
It's still pretty, I know enough to know I don't know much. So probably just enough to be dangerous.
Yeah, it's a totally different world. When you get into like intellectual property stuff, you're talking
mm-hmm.
about
intangible
almost things, so it's really weird. Let's talk about your inspirations. You said you were a big reader from early on, and you obviously
yeah.
you read the Sweet Valley Highs and all that too, because I was all into that
well.
But when you what was the first, like, I don't want to say real book, like I'm not dissing these other books, but what's the first novel that you read that really kind of like had an impact on you?
Hard. Let me think. Okay. So it's hard. All those books that I read growing up, the Sweet Valley books and the Christopher Pike, I was obsessed with those.
Those
all were really impactful on me. But I think like the first book that I remember just like really just punching me in the gut was The Poisonwood Bible by Barbara Kingsolver.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
I just love that book. I just sort of checked it. I was in college, and I just checked it up in the library randomly, just found it on a shelf. And I picked it up and started reading it. And the next thing I knew, I couldn't stop. And then I was skipping class so I could read it. And I was like skipping literature class so I could stay home and read a book. I don't know. But it just really got me. And I have like 3 copies of it now at my house. And yeah.
Now, is that a
really
book you've reread?
I think about the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you reread it? Have you reread?
I have. I actually, I first read it when I was about, 19 or 20. And then I actually took a copy of it with me to Nicaragua. I took like 3 books with me. And I read them. Those are the only books I had all summer. So I read them all like 5 times. So I read it there, and I participated in World Book Night, which I don't know if people know what that is, but we don't do it in the U.S. anymore. But for a while, World Book Night would give you free books. You could sign up to be a giver, and then they would send you free books, and you could just go to wherever you wanted and give them out to people for free. And so the first year I did it, I signed up to give out the Poisonwood Bible, which I soon realized was a mistake because it had the word Bible in it. And if you go to a public place and hand out a book that says Bible on the front, people aren't really that thrilled with you.
Right.
I'm like, no, it's fiction. It's really good. It's literature. It will change your life, you know. And
you're preaching,
Yeah, because, you know, is this really free? I don't know. But then, yeah. So that was, you know, but it was, anyway, I love that book, and I can't say enough lovely things about it.
What are some other authors that, I don't know, just maybe influenced your love of writing? Not necessarily reading, but writing.
This is so hard. Because it's hard for me to separate
to pick,
who's influenced
yeah.
my love of reading versus writing.
Well, you can tell me reading.
I don't know if I can separate them. I'd say I love Rainbow Rowell. Anything she writes, like I will read it and I will be entranced until, you know, I'm done. I love her stuff. Oh, I have recently really fallen in love with Sonali Dev and her Bollywood series. The Bollywood Affair was one of the best books I read last year. And then I'm actually reading The Bollywood Bride right now. And I have a friend who I sort of turned on to her books. And I was like, hey, Annika, you really need to read these. I think you'll like them. And she's like, oh, yeah, I have a friend who's a friend of Sonali's. And so then she read the books and she really fell in love with them too. And now she like got in touch with her friend, and now she actually knows Sonali. And so anytime we go to like a book conference or anything, I just follow her around to be like, Annika, can you introduce me to Sonali? Hey, can you get me a free book from Sonali? So that's worked out for me. I've gotten all 3 of her books now.
Awesome.
Sometimes it pays to know people who know people.
It always pays to know people in the book world.
Yes, very true.
Yeah. And someday she'll be following you around, asking you who, you know, because you'll know everyone. So see, it's turnabout fair play as well. So there you go.
We can hope.
Yeah. So I guess that kind of leaves out the next question. You like to attend book signings and things like that. So you're a total book nerd. You're a fangirl and the whole bit.
Oh, yeah. I have a bookshelf in my living room that is, you know, just a standard, you know, 5 shelves or whatever. And when I started going to book signings, I was like, oh, I'm just going to put I'll put my Harry Potters up here. Those aren't signed, but they're important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll put my signed books on this top shelf. And now between sort of going to different things, because St. Louis actually has a pretty good literary community and we get a lot of people in, we have a lot of authors who live here, and then we also have a lot of people who come through. And I started going to more book signings, and then I started going to like RWA and RT and book signings there. And now I have like that top shelf has overtaken the entire shelf, and it's on top, and I have a tub of signed books. Like it's getting out of control.
You've got the bug. It's awesome. Well, the thing is with especially romance, I think once you get sucked in, you just really, it's hard to like you'll never step out of it. You'll always be part of the community.
Right?
So, yeah.
And romance writers are so prolific. Like,
oh yeah.
So there's always more books, you know, it never stops, which is amazing, but also kind of a problem when you're on a budget and don't have any more shelf space.
Right. Well, we just moved we moved in January, and my husband's like, we have really got to do something about this book problem. I'm like, hey, half of those are yours, Ed. And he was not a big reader. Yeah, he was not a big reader, so we got together. And now everywhere we go, he'll have to, even if we've read the same book and we meet an author and we've both read their book, he has to have his signed copy plus my signed copy. So we've got two copies of a lot of authors' books signed because he wants one made to him. And I'll just, it makes me laugh because I've turned him into a complete dork and I love it so much. And now he's sucked into it all. So I can take him everywhere and it's awesome. But,
nice.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. If you can't find one like it, you can make them that way. So it's all good. So you said you go to, you like to go to RWA and RT. Are you a member of any writing groups like a local RWA chapter or anything like that?
I am. I am the Missouri Romance Writers of America chapter. I'm actually on the board of directors.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm the secretary, which they told me was, oh, no, not a lot of work. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I got sucked into that, too.
They're,
so.
Yeah, they're a really amazing group, so I'm happy to do it. But, so I'm in that. I also teach a couple of classes at St. Louis Community College, just sort of like continuing education, you know, classes
right.
in the evening and about publishing. So I do one on finding a literary agent. So I'm involved in that. And then I also have just, you know, a little side writing group that meets sometimes. We've kind of fallen away from it, but just some friends that I've met, other writers, you know, in the St. Louis area who are also interested in trying to get published. And we get together and share work and complain about stuff.
It's a very solitary craft, you know, I mean, because, you know, it's all coming out of your head. So it's really important to have these groups where you can complain about the things that you have in common.
Yeah.
Have somebody you can bounce ideas off of or talk through a plot hole or whatever that, especially for our beginning writers.
It's so important. Yes. Well, and not just beginning writers, but also, I mean, I can't speak, I haven't made it very far in this whole ordeal, but when you're a debut author, there's so many things that you don't know what's happening and no one tells you about, and you can't really complain about it to your friends who haven't gotten a contract yet because they're like, shut up, I don't want to hear you complain because they haven't gotten there yet, which is understandable, totally. So it's really, I think, important to have friends who are sort of at the same sort of steps as you in the process.
Uh-huh.
And I've made some amazing friends that way, just other authors who have been published in 2015, 2016, and they've actually become some of my very best friends. So that's a really cool thing to have someone who gets where you are and who also is willing to listen when you're like, oh my gosh, my Amazon numbers are tanking, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, I know where you're coming from in that. Writing groups, I think, are like super, super important for, you know, a hand up, a pat on the back, answer silly questions that might come up.
Right, yeah.
You know, it helps.
Does it make sense if I say this sentence? Yeah.
Yeah, I've learned things that I never even knew about. So, I mean, like, oh, wow, really? Let me go back and look at my papers. Yeah, go back and look at my work.
Yeah.
So, totally understand that.
In my writing group, we had, for a long time, we would all take turns giving like 10 pages out and everybody would read it and then they would offer feedback and we would do that 10 pages at a time. And I got but it takes a while to go, you know, get there. So I had written pretty far ahead of where my friends were reading. And I'm really bad about it. I write something, especially in the first draft, and I completely forget. Like if it's not the major plot point, I forget. And,
oh yeah.
so I gave out some stuff, you know, one night, and my friend looked at me and she's like, you know, you just gave us 3 pages of dick jokes, right? And I was like, what? And I had no recollection. But when I went back and read it, it was really just like these, you know, 5 characters sitting in a bar and they were all just telling jokes about penises. And it's one of my favorite parts of a book I've ever written, actually. But yeah, it's just, you know, luckily I could trust them with that and they could be like, okay, maybe you should cut this down to 2 pages of dick jokes. I don't know.
How long can this go on?
All right, yeah. I've got a lot of them, guys. I have to get them all out here in this chapter.
You're like, no, I just put them all on there. Just pick the 5 or 6 that you like.
Exactly. Tell me which ones are the best.
Oh, gosh. Well, that's something you can only do with other writers, so definitely.
True.
You certainly don't want to sit down with your husband and have him read that one and go, pick what you like.
Oh, he would actually probably love that. So he would like, whenever we were getting ready to go out on submission for Without Borders, I actually had him read the whole thing out to me out loud so that I could hear if things sounded weird or, you know, if there were typos. Because after a while, you just can't see the typos anymore and stuff.
Yes,
and he thought it would be funny to try to, like, do different voices for the different characters and... So, yeah, he would be fine with it. Maybe not like my mom or my grandma so much wouldn't be so happy about the dick jokes. But.
So he sounds like a hoot. That's good. Did it help, though, you hearing it coming from somebody else? Because I've heard people say read it aloud to yourself, but I even think then it'd be better hearing somebody else.
Yeah, I definitely did it both ways. I have a hard time with typos. Like, I just... I mean, everybody makes them, and it's whatever. But after a while, I just cannot see them anymore, even if I'm reading them out loud to myself. And I think sometimes also having someone else read your work out loud to you helps you. They can't be in your head and read in those inflections. So if something sounds really, really good and smooth and natural in your head, and then someone else says it out loud, and it sounds stiff and you know, just weird and not right for what that character would say, you know, you can hear that better because your brain isn't filling it in. So it was really helpful for me. I didn't have time to have him do that with semi-scripted, but maybe when I do the copy edits, I will try to make him do it.
Yeah, that's a really good suggestion. I'll have to remember that. I'll have to tell my writer group, hey, let's read them aloud to each other instead of, you know, like you said, we read each other's 10 pages or chapter by chapter or whatever. But reading aloud to the group might be a better way to do that. So that's a good idea.
Yeah. It's a little bit terrifying to have someone read stuff to you, especially if your stuff like mine has sex scenes in it. That's super terrifying. Yeah. So I recommend an alcoholic beverage to go with it.
Oh, heck yeah.
But it's really helpful. Yeah. It's really helpful. So.
Yeah. As long as your mom or your grandma's not reading it and you're okay.
Yeah.
So have they read your book?
My mom is in the process of reading it right now.
Okay.
My grandma, I know both of my grandmothers have copies. I don't know where they are in the process. we've had sort of some family stuff going on, so, you know, I forgive them for not reading it yet. So we'll see. I went to Thunder from Down Under with some of my author friends, and someone posted a picture on Facebook the next day or something. And then my mom called me. She's like, Amanda, your grandma called me and said she saw a picture of you with strippers on Facebook. And actually my grandma was like super impressed with me, I think. So I think that means she's going to be okay with the Sex and Without Borders. We will see.
Yeah.
I will report back.
Yeah, let me know how that goes. I know I, like I said, the only thing I've published is like a 6,000 word short story, but it had a sex scene in it. And so I sat next to my mom she was on one couch. I was on the other and she was reading it on Kindle. And she was like, you know, she wasn't gritting her teeth, but she was pursing her lips and shaking her head. And then she's like, that was good. And I was just like, that's all you got to say? Well, waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know. But,
right.
She's like, it was tasteful. Yeah. I'm like, all right, good.
So, from my experience from talking to my friends, it seems like not for all of us, but for a lot of us, it seems like it's been more painful for us as the author than our parents. So fingers crossed that will also be my experience.
Yeah. You'll be okay.
Yeah. We'll just never talk about it again. If it's too weird, we can just pretend this whole thing never happened.
It's done. We're done. Move on. Okay, next day. So what do you see for the future beyond this? I don't want to jump too far ahead because I don't want to put pressure on you to finish this the third book. But do you have some plans for things beyond the three books?
Not necessarily with this series. I actually have sort of an idea. This is the first time I've ever talked about this. I have sort of an idea for a fourth book in the series, but I don't know if it will happen or if it's worth trying, or I literally have not spoken to anyone about it. So I don't know if that will happen. But I've written a women's fiction manuscript that is about it's a law student who ends up needing to make ends meet. So she takes a job at her grandmother's assisted living facility. Uh-huh. And in the course of it, she starts to sort of fall in love with the job and the elderly people that she's working with, and starts to sort of question if law is what she really wants to do. And she's also, sort of in the meantime, falling in love with her boss. It's a really fun story that I pulled a lot from my own personal life experiences, and I really love it. And it's just a manuscript now, but I'm hoping that sometime in the future we can find a way to make it an actual book. So, there's that.
Women's fiction is really picking up too. I mean, it's just, I think we're all longing for those stories that kind of touch our hearts like that. So, yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah. And I'm not really good at sticking with one genre. Like, the very first manuscript I ever tried to write, I didn't finish it. Like, I made it, maybe halfway through, was, a young adult dystopian thing. It was, during the sort of Hunger Games heyday.
Oh, yeah.
And then finished that. But dystopian is not my thing. Like, there's a lot of great dystopian authors. I am not one of them. And then I decided to try my hand at romance, and I wrote, these romances, and then I jumped to women's fiction. And then RT, I was telling my agent, I was like, Jess, I really think I want to write a psychological thriller. Are you going to be mad at me if I try to write a thriller? And she was like, well, no, we can try it. It'll be okay. So she's really patient with me and my inability to commit to one genre, which is really nice. So, yeah.
Well, you got to go where your creativity sends you. So that's the name of the game.
Yeah. Hopefully one day my creativity will send me clearly in one path. But for now, it's just a little bit off.
You'll find it. But in the meantime, you've got romances to finish, and the romance readers of the world, we all love the happy endorphins we get from reading romances. So it's our getaway from life. So what are maybe an author or a book that you've read in the last 3 or 4 months that you would recommend?
Tara Wyatt, who, full disclosure, is a friend of mine, and we are co-authoring an anthology coming out later this summer. But she just came out in February with the first book in her Bodyguard series. The first one's called Necessary Risk, and they are super hot and super funny and just super amazing all around. She's one of the best writers I know. So I love her books, and I feel so incredibly lucky to be able to work on some project with her. I'm like, are you sure you want to work on something with me? But yeah, so her first book came out in February, and the second one, which I was lucky enough to beta read, which is even more fabulous, and the second one actually comes out this month, and it's called Primal Instinct. So those are the two sort of 5-star books I read most recently, I think.
Well, there you go. Highly recommended from debut author Amanda Hager.
Trademark, pending, patent pending, whatever all those things are.
There you go. Do you read do you read outside of, you were talking about writing a psychological thriller, so obviously you read all genres, you read all different kinds of things.
I do. I read a lot of just whatever strikes my fancy. So I love Gillian Flynn. I think she's amazing in terms of not just like her plots, but the tone of her stories amazes me, how she can just pick the right word to, you know, she has like five different words she could choose and she picks the exact right word to set the tone for her scene. It's just, it always amazes me. I love her books. I love listening to them on audiobook. It just, it blows me away every time. Like, why couldn't I have written that? I love her. Like I said, I love Rainbow Roll. You know, I can't get enough of her stuff. Oh gosh, I don't know. I read so many good books lately that they're all just running away from me. But yeah, I read a lot.
Like to read thrillers, psychological, contemporary? Do you read historicals at all?
I'm not a huge historical fan, but maybe just because I haven't found the right ones. I will say I really love Jeannie Lin's historical romances set in China. I've only read, I think, one or two, but they're beautiful. But other than her, I can't say that I'm a huge historical reader. I'm a very contemporary type of person.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fair. That's good. It's not for everybody. And, a lot of the things like you talk about, Gillian Flynn, I loved Gone Girl. I was rapt. I could not put it down. And then I was so pissed off at the end. But to me, she did exactly what a good writer should do. She made me talk about the book, you know.
Exactly. And you kept thinking about it afterwards, you know.
I still, to this day, you know, anybody I come across and we say something, you know, I, being a librarian, I have a habit of asking people what they like to read. And if the book comes up and we talk about it, we're still talking about it. It's been 3, 4, 5 years, you know, we're still talking about this
right?
book.
Yes.
But that's,
yes,
that's a good author there.
I went to see the movie with my husband and he had never read the book. And so it was really interesting to me to, you know, sort of like, I was almost more interested in watching his reactions to the book than actually, or to the movie than actually watching the movie, because, you know, I remember just, I feel like I'm a person who isn't that easily tricked in books. And like, I usually pick up twists, like there's a big twist in We Were Liars that I figured out pretty early on that I was in a book club at the time and they were like, what? I can't believe you figured it out. But Gone Girl, I didn't get it at all. And so it was really interesting to me to watch like my husband's reaction when it all happened on the movie screen. But
yeah,
also,
I had the same experience with mine. Same. He was like, what? And he looked at me and I was like, I know, you know, mic drop, you know?
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel like it was more impactful in the book even, I think, just because, I don't know. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
I love that book. And Dark Places, too, is fabulous. I don't know if you've read that one. But
yes, I've read that one.
I love
one.
It.
Yes.
I love how she plays with, like, the first person and the third person and the present tense and the past tense. Like, I don't know. Like,
it kind of blew my mind.
That out then.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, she's good. She is a good writer, that is for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate you being on the show. And I hope that you know, you're able to get that, your deadline met, and that we don't take too much time from you. But you know, it sounds really good. I'm really eager to read the second one, because that sounds hilarious. It sounds like I'm going to be laughing the whole time. But you were a busy, busy lady.
I am, but I appreciate you having me. It's been so much fun.
Again, let everybody know where they can find you online.
Yeah, I am on Facebook. I think my Facebook is Amanda Hager Author, or Author Amanda Hager. If you just Google Amanda Hager into the little Facebook search, you'll probably find me. I post stuff every Friday and every Wednesday. On Wednesdays, I post Weird Thing Wednesday, where I just post the weirdest thing I found on the internet that week. And Fridays, I post 5 things that are sort of going on in my life. So you can join us for those on Facebook. I'm on Twitter all of the time, too much of the time. That's probably why I actually haven't met my deadline. But you can always find me on Twitter. It's Amanda_Hager. Okay. And I'm on Goodreads and Instagram when I can remember to get on those things. But I am there, too, so you can find me. I usually post pictures of my dog on Instagram, though, so don't expect anything that great.
Yeah, there's the people with the cats. There's the people with the dogs. There's the people with the food.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes.
And then there's those people with the drinks that I'm like, I wish I had your life. Yeah.
Right. I have some friends on Instagram who post like these amazing selfies, and they look so beautiful, and
I know.
They look perfect. And then I try to take a selfie of myself, and I think I'm just a little maybe too old for selfies. I don't know, but I'm like, oh God, I look like I have four chins, and do I really have that many wrinkles? So I just never post selfies. It's not good.
Yeah, I sit there with the selfie, you know, it has the selfie camera back at you, and like, what angle do I get to get rid of this chin, you know? I'm like, holding it way
right,
up.
Right,
like, forget it. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, I need a tutorial. Someone make that, please. Someone probably has. I just haven't found it. But,
yeah. Oh, my God, YouTube. I bet there is.
No. I think the takeaway is find me on Twitter, not on Instagram. I'm much better on Twitter than Instagram.
There you go. Well, thanks again for being on the show, and much luck to you in the future books and in crossing genres, because that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And on the sales of this one, which is through Diversion, and they can find it on Amazon and on Diversion's website as well.
Yep, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, you know, all the usual suspects. You can order it.
Awesome. Well,
thanks
again for being on, and good luck. Best of luck. And we remember everybody to go to the library, go to this event page on The Librarian, the live interview with Amanda Hager, and enter to win a copy of Without Borders. And she's going to pass
great.
It
Thank
on
you.
Her page too. All right. Have a
I
great
will be posting
evening.
It everywhere.
Awesome. Do that. I don't know if anybody's entered, because I just pinned it to the top of the event page. I'll pin it to the top of the Librarian page as well, so it'll be visible for everybody.
Perfect.
All right. You have a great evening, and again, best of luck.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
All right. You too. And thanks, everybody else, for listening in tonight. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I'm on Twitter. Boy, this is Thursday. I can't talk. I'm on Twitter at Hot Librarian, which is HOT_Librarian_, and Google+ is Tabitha Pope. This podcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes. And here at this link, you can find it as a podcast. Authors on the Air Global Radio can be found online at www.authorsontheair.com. You can also find it on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and just about anywhere else you can think of in the social media universe. And thank you to Authors on the Air for this opportunity to share my passion for romance and sharing the hottest authors in young adult, new adult, and adult romance with all of you. And to my husband, who is about an hour and a half away from me tonight, I will see you, I guess, coming soon. Maybe tomorrow night, and everybody else, I'll see you next Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on The Librarian. Have sweet dreams.